Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you. You have a friend.
Well, welcome to today's episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Grace, calling to you live from Bonita Springs, Florida, where I will be from now until the end of April, maybe beginning of May, each Tuesday at noon Eastern Time. I'm hoping I've got Jennifer Carter on the line with me today, too. Jennifer, are you here?
Hey, Gina, I sure am.
Well, how was your holiday?
My holiday was wonderful. It was with family. It was both warm and cold, and it was nice. It was nice.
Oh, awesome. Well, you know, my husband did the most amazing thing for me for Christmas. Tuesday night at 8:39 at night, we were in Biloxi, Mississippi, 717 miles away from our destination, where I really wanted to be by Christmas Eve. And I just kind of said, okay, well, there's no way we'll be there for Christmas Eve, but if we really hurry, we'll get there by Christmas. That guy, I went to bed Tuesday night about 10:30, expecting to wake up in Pensacola about 300-400 miles away. Then the next day on Christmas Eve, drive to Naples. He drove 717 miles straight through without stopping, without resting, or anything.
Wow.
And then by 11 a.m. the next morning, so that I could spend the entire day Christmas Eve and Christmas Day on the beach. Now, is that a great guy or what?
That's a great guy. Merry Christmas to you.
That's for sure. It was amazing. The weather here has been gorgeous, 83 degrees and sunny, and it has just been awesome.
I'm so glad you're back to warmth.
Me too. Oh, I forgot how wonderful it could be. I can actually breathe again.
You know, I think having met the two of you and seeing you two talk, well, you're two different people, but your goals and where you guys want to go is very much aligned. You kind of know where each one and the other wants to go, and you support each other in that. And I think that's one of the reasons why you guys have such an amazing relationship is you know where you guys want to go.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, yeah.
It really makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, we met through a dating service. We didn't meet in a bar. We didn't meet at church. We weren't on a blind date. We met through a dating service. And when we went to the dating service, neither one of us ever intended on getting married again. We both went to the dating service just to meet new people, nothing more. I was his first date. He had taken out a lifetime membership. I was the first one. We have been together ever since. He never dated anybody else from the service. He was my 9th date. And we've been together for what will be 19 years on March 26th.
Wow, 19 years.
Congratulations. Isn't that a long time?
From a dating service. I never had much faith in dating services. I've never tried one myself, but it seems like it's very hit or miss. But I guess it can certainly be a big hit.
It's got to be a dating service that really matches you based on who you are and really what you're all about. And the service that we used was called Matchmaker International, and they're still around. And they really take the time to do like a 22-page questionnaire, so they really have a clear-cut picture of who you are. And they match you up on as many of the different areas in those 22 pages as they can. So it's not just, okay, here's a guy and here's a girl, let's see if something happens. It's really two people that are hand-picked for one another. And every one of the 9 guys that I dated from there was a guy that I really had so much in common with. It was eerie how much we had in common. And I was shocked to see that because I didn't think that there would be that many of them out there. but it was really true. And yet every one of the guys was so different. I dated a guy who was a physicist. I dated a guy who was a pharmacist. I dated a guy who played trumpet professionally. I dated a guy who owned an Amish furniture store. I dated a guy who was a vice president for Tombstone Pizza. Who else did I date? Lots of neat guys. A nuclear physicist, two different physicists. And every one of us had a lot in common. Yeah. So Phil always teases me that if I'm not good, he's got his lifetime membership. And if we get divorced, he can go get other chicks anytime he wants.
Right, right. That's a big carrot held over your head, or a big, yeah, I'm sure. That's really funny.
But, you know, and I'm only talking about this because we're talking relationships, right? So it really shows me why sites like eHarmony are as successful as they are. Because people really don't have a better way today to go and meet the love of their life and their real dream person. And people really are lonely.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's kind of funny in this day of technology that they are, but I think there's a lot of isolation and not connecting on points that are really important. I think that's the challenge, and obviously you and your husband have found ways to connect on those points that are really important. And without that, what we can be connected by is it can be shallow and not strong, and hence, as you said, a lot of people are lonely, I think, for that very reason.
Yeah, and the first years of our relationship were really strong. Then we got married. We were dating for 3 years before we got married. Then we got married, and I had my career, and the plan had been that I would work a couple years, then I would have a baby, and he would retire and stay home to take care of the baby, and he would never work again. Well, money got in the way, and life got in the way, and we were fighting cats and dogs nonstop. By the time I got into my car accident, 3 years into our marriage, we had tried getting pregnant for about 3 weeks, and unsuccessful for 3 weeks, but hey, it was only 3 weeks. And then I got into the car accident. And then life changed again. Well, by a year and a half into that whole illness, we almost got divorced. Had we not had so much in common, I think we easily would have gotten divorced. But because we had that whole commonality behind us, we were able to use materials from a woman by the name of Ellen Kreidman, and Ellen has some wonderful stuff. LightHerFire.com and LightHisFire.com are her two main programs. One's for guys, one's for girls. And what they teach you is good communication skills, because men and women do not communicate in the same way. They are completely different creatures. Women don't always know how guys communicate. Guys don't always know how women communicate. Using her materials, we were able to start talking in ways that the other one could understand. And we had all these issues that neither one of us even knew were issues because we weren't hearing one another. Yeah, we could listen, but we weren't really hearing it. When we really changed our communicationship skills and learned how to better communicate with one another, one of the biggest outcomes for us, and this drives our friends nuts, you guys, everybody either loves us or hates us, we bicker all the time. It's part of what we learned in Ellen Kreidman. Because of the way that the two of us hear one another best, we only tend to hear one another when we're really loud. And so it appears to other people like we're arguing constantly, and yet we're not really arguing. It's kind of our way of communicating with one another. And although it might appear like we're arguing, the two of us are, like, closer than ever as a result of it, and it's a really weird dynamic, let me tell you. We never go to bed angry. We never say hurtful things. We never sit there and call one another names, but we get loud. And when we do, we each really hear the other. And because of that, we have gotten closer than ever before. And there is no way you could separate the two of us today. I truly believe we are soulmates. And I truly believe that we will be together for all eternity. And I can't imagine my life without him. He can't imagine my life, his life without me, which is a really neat thing to have. I believe that there's someone out there for everybody, that your soulmate really does exist. You just sometimes need help finding him or her. So what does this all have to do with relationship marketing, and why am I going on and on about my husband and I? Well,
can't wait to hear.
When you're out there building relationships with your audience, you've got to really know who your audience is. Is it men? Is it women? The way that you communicate with them needs to be different, because communicating with them both in the same way, one audience is not going to hear you, period. Not going to happen. So even using Ellen Kreidman's materials to learn how to better communicate with your audience if they are of the opposite sex can be a huge thing, because you've got to find that way to communicate. Interesting thing, one of my friends, a guy by the name of Sam Heyer, Sammy is a sweetie pie, 22 years old, multimillionaire, guy is brilliant, started when he was really young. I think he was first online in a business position at the age of 15, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Anyway, he made his first million before 18. Rough life all over. Sam did this test to a very large list. He sent the same essential promotion, but written in two different ways. Sent one message written for guys to the men in the list, sent another message written for women to the other part of the list, and sent them directly to the appropriate audience. Sales increased 80% from doing that. Now, that's huge. Huge. You're almost doubling your sales just by sending a message that clearly talks to the right audience. So the guys was, you know, more laid back and more, you know, talking in a story about sports and stuff that guys would be interested in. Where the women and the message that got sent to women touched more on the emotions and the touchy-feely side of stuff. Doubled his results. 80%.
Wow.
Close enough for me.
Just separated by men and women? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's all that was different about it.
That's so interesting. You know, you're making me think, reminding me of, there's a lot of those different personality profiles out there, and probably a lot of different ones that you and I are familiar with. One that jumps to mind as soon as you started talking about know your audience and know how to talk with them was the DISC profile. Are you familiar with that?
I am.
Okay. With that, that was the first one I heard about that I started putting it in relation to people I talked with and worked with in the business sense. And what this has to do with it is talking about personalities and whatnot. I think I shared this with you at some point. I used to be extremely intimidated by and strongly disliked people, usually men, with very strong, arrogant personalities. I would speak with them, and I just thought they were arrogant, didn't listen, and I didn't think they had much value.
And if they said, Jennifer, you can go over here and find $1 million, you probably wouldn't have even heard them.
Right, because it would have come across in a different way.
Yeah.
When I read about the DISC personality, and it just has four different personality profiles, and again, there's a lot of them out there, and it revealed to me, number one, the kind of person I am, the mix of profiles that I am, as well as where other folks are coming from and how to relate with them. It changed everything. And what's interesting about that is, number one, these people that I previously perceived as arrogant, strong, whatever, I started viewing in a different way. And I don't know how to describe how I viewed them, except I was able to connect with them very well. And in fact, I would definitely say that some of my best and favorite clients today are those very people. The very dominant,
Now that's interesting.
Yeah, isn't that?
Yeah.
Different me perceiving them differently and me understanding how to communicate with them differently, so that communication barrier was not only broken down, but, you know, lines of communication are open and flowing. And I think that applies to everybody. And obviously, the way that I talk with these people, mostly men, although not only men, is very different than people who are much more, you know, who have different profiles, who are much more perhaps touchy-feely in nature, or much whatever the opposite of dominant is.
Right. Well, back before I even went to law school, I had always been in very male-dominated worlds. So I used to sell power tools for Ryobi and Makita. I was a national sales coordinator for both. I also sold wheel bearings for, like, really big wheel bearings, the kind that would go in trucks and tractors and stuff like that, the ones that were as tall as me. Not exactly very female-oriented roles. And I would go to, like, the National Hardware Show and be the only woman on the floor, other than the models who were supposed to be there and looking sexy and hot. And I was one of the guys. In playing that role, I really learned a lot about communicating with men. But not very many women have that opportunity. Just like not very many men have the opportunity to learn how to communicate with women. It just doesn't happen that often. So it's something that if you're in a role or you're in a market that is comprised of primarily people of the opposite sex, it's a skill that you need to learn. And you're going to have to find some resources to help you learn how to better communicate. Because otherwise, even if you do get results, they're going to be limited. You're going to leave much, much, much money on the table. And you've got to find a way to make it work. I know Carrie's on the phone with us today, and we've got one other caller. Who else is here with us today? Carrie, are you there?
Maybe they need to be unmuted.
I unmuted Carrie, and then I unmuted one other person, but I don't know who it is because it says all ones on my screen. So, Carrie, how are you?
I'm good.
Did you have a nice holiday as well?
I did. We had a really nice time.
Oh, awesome. So, in your role, in your market, who do you need to communicate with, men or women?
I need to communicate with women is my market, though I need to communicate with men as well because I, over the 10 years I went to people's homes and taught this offline, I saw that those women had to deal with patients or, you know, loved ones they were caring for who were arrogant and of course, listen to them at all. You know, I could at least get a little bit of respect, but, you know, anything they said was worthless for their loved one. So I had to be able to communicate with that difficult personality and with the female caregiver. So, and my blog has to kind of combine those as well. That's been a stretch for me because I always tailored it to each person, and people are so very different. But I found a balance in trying to address the issues in a way that even the harsh, arrogant ones can listen to, and then but talking with that caregiver is the easy part. So I think that if you are your market, or at least you grew up with your market, or something, that you're a lot better off if you're familiar with how to talk to that market.
Yeah, you really are. It can make so much of a difference, so much of a difference. And when you really figure out how to communicate with that other audience, it feels right. It feels better, doesn't it?
It sure does. You know, I've been trying to think of ways. The only way that I could think of to learn how to communicate with your audience, if you don't know how already, is to get yourself surrounded by your audience. In your personal life.
But as I learned with my husband, just surrounding yourself with the other sex isn't necessarily enough to make it work.
True.
It's not. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't have gotten to the point where we were almost getting divorced. I mean, I really had already called a lawyer. I already had divorce papers drawn up. When I say we were almost getting divorced, we were days away from getting divorced. Literally. So it's a matter of finding the right resources. So, Jennifer, do you remember where you did that DISC profile, or do you know of any good resources where folks can go and take that kind of a profiling test for themselves online?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'll mention a couple of them, because what's interesting about it is, one, once you kind of see where you're coming from, as well as it's just as valuable to read where other people are coming from, and we'll talk about, I think in a few minutes, how to address the different kinds of people within your audience, because really our audiences will be made up more than one kind of person. Well, there's a lot of different DISC profile tests out there, but the one that I keep going, there's a free one. There's a lady by the name of Carol Dysart who does these DISC profiles, and she speaks about it, and she has this really great book on it. And so if you go to caroldysart.com, it's caroldysart.com, you can take the DISC profile. And the DISC profile, again, it's just broken down into four different personality styles of dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance. But what you'll find when you go there is that none of us are just one of those. We're a combination of them. But we have one more than the other, generally speaking, that tends to be more influential. Another really good personality profile that think...
I didn't get the Carol site yet. Spell her last name one more time.
Last name, first name is Carol, C-A-R-O-L. Last name is Dysart, D-Y-S-A-R-T, caroldysart.com. That, along with, I was actually talking with one of my clients a few weeks ago. He's a speaker, but he also has a brick-and-mortar business. And he says, this is kind of funny, I'd never thought about this, but he won't hire people until after they've taken a personality assessment. He knows what kind of a personality he has, what kind of a person he is, and what kind of people he needs to complement him in order for his company to be successful. He has his folks take, they may also take the DISC. They definitely take the Myers-Briggs.
That's a real big one that people use.
Yep. And there are free assessments that you can take. That one as well as another one. I found my free Myers-Briggs at a site called Kiersey.com, which is K-E-I-R-S-Y, Kiersey.com. And what's really cool about this is, I don't know, once you take the personality assessment, you see the things that you've done in the past and your motivations for what you're doing in the present in a totally different light. And one of the things that I was interested in, so we're approaching the new year, and I'm thinking, you know, we'd goals a little bit more different direction, which is great. But one of the things, we need to know where we're going and why we're doing what we're doing. And sometimes, as we're setting our goals, we'll say, well, I got to stop doing these bad things and start doing, you know, more of these good things, whatever they are, strengths and weaknesses, right? But what's interesting about all of these profiles, if you take a personality assessment, you read your profile, and then you go deeper into these sites, one of the things I found a common thread in all of them is that they say, rather than trying to fix your weaknesses and fix the weaknesses of those you're communicating with, focus on the strengths. Focus on your own strengths. Make more of those and find the strengths in those that you're working with, whether it's in your personal relationships, of your spouse, of your children, or the people that we're working with on a day-to-day basis. And I think there's a lot of wealth in that philosophy because it's just a lot easier and a lot more fun to focus on strengths rather than weaknesses. And I really do think that we move forward.
Much more positive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's more positive, has us spending less time about, you know, how or why we're weak or we're bad or, you know, we've got to fix these things in our life, but more so on, hey, let's do what we're really good at. And same thing in working with people. Going back to my example earlier of strong men, people are perceived to be strong, arrogant men. Again, this perception has really changed. But what I saw as arrogance before, I now perceive as just, very strong, goal-oriented. And so what's most important is the end point, you know, getting to the goal, getting to the prize. How can we get there? And in knowing that, you know, very strong, goal-oriented people are, the strength of that is, wow, they tend to accomplish a lot, and they tend to push aside the things that they see as getting in their way. And that was the element that I perceived as, you're arrogant, you don't care about these other things. Well, that's not true. They were just goal-oriented. And so once I focused on, okay, they want to get to the end goal, they want to win the prize, how can we focus on getting there the quickest? Once I could do that with them, because that's what they were good at, things were great. So, yes, focusing, finding the strengths and the goals of our audience, bring it back to talking about speaking with our audiences. When we know what our audience wants, as well as, I think it'd be interesting to talk about, we've got three different audiences on the phones. We've got your audience with Gina, which is internet marketers, and Carrie, we have yours, which is healthcare givers, as well as people who have health challenges. And then mine, women in business. We've got a lot of different personalities out there. So, how do we figure out how to communicate with the different types of people in our audiences? What do you guys think about that?
Good question. Carrie, how about you?
Oh, you guys have me just going crazy here, because I have used Myers-Briggs in the past, and the DISC was one of the things that they did in the beginning of the last program I was in. And I haven't thought about either of them since. So this really has my wheels turning again. But, yeah, this is something that I deal with on a regular basis. And even in forums is where I find I really get challenged. Because in forums, you find people really attached to disease, and they have that arrogant thing going on.
What do you mean by attached to disease, Carrie? Explain a little bit.
Oh, that's a biggie.
Oh,
I know exactly what she means on this, because I was there. So, for example, while I was sick that entire time, I had to do blood tests 3 to 5 times a week. I could tell you every single number on every single test for a month. And it became the whole focal point of everything I did was, okay, what are my numbers going to be? Are they going to be worse? Oh, God, they're going to be worse. I know they're going to be worse. And guess what? They'd be worse every time. I did my first blood test yesterday. Yeah. I did my first blood test yesterday in 4 years. And I told my doctor, if you tell me the numbers, I'm going to be angry. I don't want to know the numbers. If you need to know them, great, you can take the test. But leave me out of it. It's not what I am or who I am or what I want anymore. And I truly feel like if I just hear the numbers, it can cause me to fall right back to that old pattern so easily that I don't even want to know what the numbers are. Don't want to see it. I had everything charted out in Excel, and I was charting the flow and the patterns, and it was terrible. That's being involved in the disease process. It was making me sicker. That's what you're talking about, right, Carrie?
Yeah. And they can't see beyond that, you know, because
they won't hear you in most instances if you tell them that that's not healthy. You've got to find a way to break it in a way that they will hear.
Well, and it's not even about that in those forums, I've noticed. It's not even about being healthy. It's they're educating each other about how to navigate the illness, you know. And the more focused that they get on that illness, the less likely they are to really, you know, get a glimmer of sunshine.
How do you then speak to somebody who is, in your case, Carrie, who is back to the focus? And I know you're about helping people get better with heart failure solutions.
You broke up. I missed your question.
Okay. So the question was, how do you communicate with somebody? Your goal is to help them get better. How do you communicate with somebody who's in that state of mind that you and Gina just discussed?
Well, what I do is I always repeat myself a lot. and I always try to talk about them and talk about realistic goals, just feeling better. And I try to build the relationship. That's what I did in the home. More so in the home, I would just build the relationship and maybe throw in very little of the repeating myself. But I had kind of a speech, so I'd make sure I got all the parts in. So I'd make sure in my brain I'd be running through that outline to make sure that I mentioned all the you know, various things that I had it on written on a piece of paper, so that paper would be in my mind. But for the most part, I would skim over all of the important stuff and focus only on the relationship when I was in the home. And then eventually they would start listening to me more, and when they would start repeating back to me things I said, that's when I would start to take the relationship to another level.
Okay.
What do you think of that, Jennifer?
Say again, Gina.
What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's interesting, and it seems like Carrie's audience is very, well, I'm sure they're a wide variety of people, but there is a very common personality within her target audience, which is what's interesting. You have and she seems to have a very clear-cut strategy with that. But, I find with my audience, I think, to be, obviously, it's pretty broad in nature and a lot of different personality types, so I think we've got to communicate on a lot of different levels and from a lot of different angles, I think.
Yeah, that's the challenge of a blog, because you can't, you know, that's what I would do for somebody who couldn't hear me and who was hard and who was, you know, hard to even relate to, you know. But somebody who was warm and welcomed me right in the door and took notes while I was talking would be a very different relationship. So on a blog, it's a little bit more challenging, but when they start to speak up, then it's easy. Then you can go right back to even to just a short comment. It seems I can feel someone, you know. I can make my person, my communication one-on-one to a comment, you know. So as soon as they reply, so it goes back to what, you know, when I was in the home, if they were very quiet and I couldn't tell if they were fearful or distrustful or just shy, you know, why they weren't talking, you know. And then as soon as they would speak up, I could figure out what they needed to hear.
Well, one thing that I want to make sure you think about is the stories that you tell in your blog, I think, are going to be more effective in reaching these people than any other thing that you have at your disposal.
Yeah, that's your relationship builder, your connection.
In telling those stories, if you tell them in a way that lets people see how ridiculous it is to be involved in the disease process and how doing so can have such a negative outcome, by telling enough of the same moral in the story, enough stories with the same moral in them, you should be able to get through to a much larger number of people. What it took for me was the massage therapist telling me that the one thing that I was looking for, the one thing I was looking for was a way to not die as soon. And I think the only reason that I even listened to her was that the first words out of her mouth were, you're not going to die as soon as you think. She hit me with the one thing that was like the focus of my involvement in my disease process, which was dying. And I'm sure it's that way with your audience as well.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to hit them with the words that are going to get to the core, no matter how blunt it might seem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most people chose not to talk to me about dying. They thought it was just like a taboo subject because here I was dying.
Yes.
So I rarely had conversations with people about death, dying, my funeral, any of that. And here was this woman who I had just walked in and sat down on her table. She didn't even say hello. The first words were, you're not going to die as soon as you think, putting it out there in such a straightforward way that it really opened my mind enough to even hear anything else she had to say.
Yeah.
And in your blogging, you've got to be that person that touches on that taboo subject for everybody else that really hits the core of what your audience is focusing on. Now, for each market, it's going to be a little bit different, right, in terms of what is that taboo topic. For every market, there's going to be a taboo topic. And you've got to be the one that's out there being open about it and being open in a way that they can clearly see that you are a credible source to even be talking about this topic with and that you know what it is that you're talking about. But just the fact that you're willing to talk about it when nobody else is going to give you some credibility from the start. Because nobody else even thinks about talking about the topic, and you do. And then once you've opened up that channel of communication, you've got to be really, really crystal clear in terms of showing them step by step what to do and what direction to go in. Now, how you relate that to a man and how you relate that to a woman are going to be totally different, and even differences within those two audiences as well. But regardless, that's the next step you've got to go to, is that step-by-step progression. If you're dealing with most women, telling them what to do in a step-by-step way has to also involve the emotion, because most women are more emotional and in touch with the emotional side than they are with the analytical side. Where if you're doing the same thing for men, you've got to get to the reasoning behind it and the analytical side of each step, because that's what they're looking for and that's what they want to hear. So try really going out there and using the stories to be blunt about the topic that is on the mind of every one of your patients and caregivers, and that is the death of that patient. And use the stories to do it in a way that's a little less blunt, but really don't sidestep talking about the terms death and dying. Really talk about it. Something I've never really looked up, but maybe you have. Have you ever looked at the number of searches that have been done on a monthly or daily basis around the terms death and dying and other terms related to them?
Yeah, and grief and grieving. Yeah.
Is there a lot?
Yeah, a lot. And, you know, I was thinking about that when you were talking, that grief is like that too, because grief is such a difficult thing because everyone does it differently. And, you know, there's no right way to do it. And nobody wants to talk about it. And I remember some of my patients would just, tears would pour down their face because I would just walk right up to them and give them a big hug and start talking about the person that they lost, you know, which is really what they wanted. They wanted to think about them and remember them and hear about how much I missed them too, you know. And I could tell it shocked them because nobody ever did. They didn't talk.
You know, the death of Bernie Mac, getting 45,210 searches per month.
Still.
Since Bernie Mac died from a heart attack, could you talk about the death of Bernie Mac in a way that would tell stories that would really touch your audience?
Oh, that's funny, because he died right when I was doing my research. It was like,
I remember that.
And wow, yeah, I should never have used that. I have so many blog posts that go, oh, remember me. So, you can write every day and still not get everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Death Remembrance Poems has 52,410 searches per month.
Yeah.
Death Note, 36,330. Memorial Death Sayings, 29,430. I'm shocked at how much there is in terms of the number of searches around death. Death itself, 82,140.
Yeah, I'm not at all. That just doesn't surprise me a bit. I've looked into it quite a bit. But it is hard to blog a lot about because it's such a heavy subject. But that's what I was going to say, is that when you talk about those taboo subjects in every market, you sure do have to be building that relationship, because that's the only thing that eases the topic and, you know, makes your audience comfortable enough to...
Now, grief and grieving is not nearly the kind of numbers. Grieving is 2,280. Grief is 7,980 compared to 82,140 for death.
For death. I know, but death... Well, death is... Well, yeah, I guess I use death a bit, but...
Use death and dying again? Physical stages of dying, 44,970. As I lay dying, 32,970.
Death and wow. See, I know I've looked into this, but it's even like a sensitive subject for me.
11,460 people a month search for the odds of dying in a plane crash.
Oh wow, that's a lot of people.
Is that amazing? So can you talk about the odds of dying in a plane crash as opposed to the odds of dying from congestive heart failure?
Oh, gosh, that's a good idea. Let me write that down.
So it's taking that topic that is taboo and talking about it in a way that is not negative, that is positive, and that can relate a very clear-cut pattern or step-by-step process that people should be following to overcome that taboo topic.
And so you're saying to talk to women that you need to be putting the emotion in there? I mean, and do I want to do that at the same time, add the emotion and the reason for the women and the men?
If you're talking to women specifically, then, yeah, you need to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your caregivers are primarily women, not men. Now, the patients, I think, are going to be primarily men, not women.
Yeah, I communicate with men more easily, I think, because I grew up in a house full of men. So I'm wondering, you have me wondering if I do mention emotion enough to speak to the women, so I'll definitely be focusing more on that.
But, and especially for you, because your business is kind of tricky in terms of blogging and communications, because you've got to hook the patients in a way that gets the patients to talk to their caregivers to get the caregivers to open their wallets. Oh, that's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just go straight to the caregivers and skip the patients.
Mm-hmm.
Either way. But I think you've got to have some of both, a good mix that gets both groups involved in it. So maybe one post that's more analytical and philosophical for the men, and one post that's more touchy-feeling for the women, and kind of go flip-flop it back and forth. So pick one keyword, do one touchy-feely post on it, then one more analytical post on it, then go to the next keyword.
Oh, yeah, great idea, great. That's a good way to focus on it, great.
So that it gets found by both groups of people and that both groups are really resonating with it. Jennifer, yours is much more straightforward because it's women in business. You're always talking to women. And women in business is kind of an interesting one because we all presume that women in business implies that these are going to be women that are more analytical and things like that, right?
Oh, this is so funny. Okay, finish where you're going, and I'm ready to jump in with that.
But women are still women. And as much as we want to assume that these are going to be women who are, you know, more men-like because they're entrepreneurial, deep down inside, they are still women. So for you, writing in a way that makes it sound on its face to be something that would even appeal to a man, but is touching at its core in a way that women would really relate to it, would really be effective.
Yep. I think a lot of women in business and we've even talked about this on our brief blog talk radio show here, but coming to business, and many who've been in business for a long time, assuming that they have to be, well, that they have to take on the characteristics of, I'm generalizing here, but the characteristics of a man in order to be successful in business, And what I mean by that, again, completely generalizing, but is being, you know, goal-oriented, just the facts, ma'am, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And I am, and you do have to be goal-oriented to be successful in business, and you do have to have the facts, of course, and you have to have a strategy.
That does not mean that we've got to get rid of our femininity, our intuition, and our emotions.
When I'm talking with women and I bring into the conversation, whatever it is we're talking about, the business side of things, but I bring into there because I know maybe, you know, something's going on with the kids, with their spouse, with whatever, which I think some women assume maybe it's taboo to bring, you know, personal life into business or to talk about that. But when I bring it up or when women start finding, gosh, we can't, because this is a reality, this is a part of our life, you know, being the caregiver for, you know, for our children, for our spouse, doing the things that women, generally speaking, tend to do more so than men, as well as their business, it affects our business. And so you're absolutely right, Gina, being able to talk about those other things and the emotions that come with it, the need to balance, the need to vent sometimes, the need to, you know, be goal-driven and focus on your business. But also, and since, you know, since I'm talking about women in business, so many are also just as goal-driven about their families, about their children, about their spouses. So,
and reminding those women that in being goal-driven, it's okay to use their intuition to help them achieve their goals faster. Because women have such powerful intuition for the most part. Yeah, there's always exceptions to every rule. But you're going to find that more women have a really strong sense of intuition than not. And let them know that it's okay. Because most of them don't know that that's okay. They think that in order to be successful in business, they need to let their intuition stay out of it. Where those women who really tap into the intuition that they have naturally usually will build bigger businesses faster.
Yeah.
So it takes someone like you to remind them that that's okay. And I think you'll really build some strong relationships in the process. Women won't necessarily realize why they're drawn to you, but they will know that they are being drawn to you for some reason. So that's the key, and the same is true with you in talking about death and dying, Carrie. They won't really see it as why they're being drawn to you. They just know that they are drawn to you. I mean, it took years before I realized why that one massage therapist was someone that I finally heard when I hadn't heard anybody else, including my doctors. And it was only when I really sat down and started asking myself, well, why did I hear her, that I really realized what allowed me to hear her. But it wasn't something that, even the day that she talked to me, if someone would have asked me, well, why did you hear her, it wasn't something I would have been ready to assess and analyze. All I knew was I was really drawn to this woman in a way that I hadn't been drawn to anybody else. And that's really true of any audience. They're not going to know why they're drawn to you, just that they are being drawn to you, period. And that's okay. That's actually what you want, because the relationship will be so much stronger as a result. Make sense?
Oh, yeah.
But this is where being that authoritative voice of an expert is so important. Because once you've got them with that taboo topic and you're talking to them in the voice that they need to hear, you've got to be really clear in terms of what you're telling them to do, because they're not going to know what they need to do next. Now you've got their attention, but what are they supposed to do about it? So without being that authoritative voice of an expert, you're not going to be able to get them to take action in some positive way. And it can actually frustrate them and cause them more harm than good if you kind of open up the channel of communication, but then you tend to be wishy-washy or politically correct in telling them what to do. You've got to be firm, you've got to be concise, you've got to be clear. So if you're really following your passion and you either already know what to tell them or you've got enough background to know how to research what to tell them, it really becomes even more important at that point that you take advantage of that experience and knowledge that you have to be that authoritative expert, because they're going to listen to you at that point. Make sure that you're telling them the right things to do. Make sense?
Oh, wow, this really makes a lot of sense, but this has been a big aha for me. I'm so glad I got up and got on the call. Because I've been saying that it's a heavy subject and, you know, that, you know, just that, you know, that challenge. But I'm dancing around it even right there, that death and
you
death
are
uncomfortable. And,
yep.
And that's the uncomfortable
And you're
part.
Reminding them that it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
You don't necessarily want to remind them that it's uncomfortable. You want to just go in and talk about it.
Yeah, that's what I used to do in the home. You know, I guess it's just I feel more cautious about that subject because I can't gear it to the person I'm talking to. You know what I mean?
But you can. You can.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, who are you writing for?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you writing for? It's a question.
The female caregiver.
One female caregiver. One specific female caregiver. Whoever that one ideal prospect is that in your initial research you created that character study around. So you go out, you create that, you do all your research, you create a character study of who you want to target. So one of my groups of apprentices in Group 8, a couple by the name of Steve and Kath were on a call with me on Saturday. They just completed this amazing character study of a woman they call Sophie. And they have such a clear picture of who Sophie is. Everything they write in their blog, all of their products, their whole sales process is being created for Sophie. So if you were talking in terms of death and dying, who would you be talking to? You'd be talking to that Sophie. So whoever Sophie is in your business, that's who you're writing it for. Now maybe you want to develop a series of characters to talk to if you've got a number of different types of people within your audience so that you go one after another and talk to each one at a time. If you're trying to talk to all of them at the same time, it will never work. Not one of them will identify with you. If you talk to them one at a time, one after another, you will eventually capture all of them. Bless you.
This is where we come back to those caricatures that I had initially loved
yes.
so much, the idea of, and I was recently, when they were talking, I was thinking about that. And so... so much on my plate, but that's certainly something I want to get busy with and play with. That just sounds like fun. And the
well, let me let the rest of our listeners in on what you're talking about there. Early on in Carrie's business, Carrie had talked to me about a number of patients that she had dealt with back in her offline career. And these were people who were very near and dear to her, and she was asking, can she use their stories? And I said, well, you can do one better than that. Not only can you use those stories, you can take each one of those people and create a caricature of them and put them up on the blog and use them to allow people to resonate with each one of those people and let them go on a journey the same way that one of those people would be going on a journey. Tell that person's story through a series of blog posts, carry it over into the products, and allow other people to follow that one caricature, persona, whatever you want to call it. So it's what Carrie's talking about here is she still hasn't gotten around to creating those caricatures and telling the stories to allow people to get in on going on the journey. And I think that is just extremely powerful for you, Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a really easy way to get around that challenge of addressing, you know, the different aspects, you know, by addressing a specific caricature.
Absolutely. And so you just talk about death and dying for each one of them. How would each one of them handle it? What would they be doing? And really show people what your advice is for each one of them individually. But don't just dance around the subject because you're doing what everybody else does.
I did a really good post. I'm actually kind of proud of one post as we're talking that I had that I'd written. Does the shadow of Christmas past bringing something about that depression? The depression was the keyword, but that was a really good post about death and dying, and I really addressed it in an emotional way. And if I could, and actually that's one of my caricatures is that person, that caregiver.
That's a great idea.
So that's where I'll start. I'll start with that post that was just about a week ago, a couple weeks ago, and I'll make her my first. And I know.
Now let me ask you, on that particular post, did you get more traffic than usual?
I don't know that I did because I don't know that I don't think it's bookmarked. I don't think I'm finished commenting on it. You know, so it's one of those posts that has not been finished stepping. But I don't drop them. I just continue until I get them bookmarked. But I'll get that done. But boy, yeah, the posts that have all the steps done sure do drive more traffic than the posts that
hugely
don't.
Hugely different. Hugely different.
And get to the point that I know which ones are done because of the my blog log stuff. So I need to go to those posts. I don't even have paid resources in many of them. So.
Well, watch for a post like that that you really think is something you're really proud of, that you think you did a really good job in. Watch a number of things. Watch the number of visitors it's generating. Watch the number of comments it's generating. Watch the number of clicks it's generating. Because if you're doing a good job of tapping into the right taboo topic in the right way, with the right voice, attracting the right audience, you will see higher visitors, you will see more action being taken by those visitors, you will see a higher level of engagement, so the number of page views per visitor will go up, and as a result, if there are paid resources in that post, you will definitely see more sales, more subscribers, that sort of thing. So pay particular attention to the results. That will tell you if you're on the right track, you know, and use that kind of as a testing ground for yourself to try some stuff out, see what works and see what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the best advice I can give you in terms of, you know, looking at what's going to work.
Mm-hmm. With those specific posts. That's good.
Yep, each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been doing much blogging, Jennifer?
I haven't been doing so much lately. No, I haven't. But when it's interesting hearing you talk about Carrie's post speaking to a particular person or personality and creating that, and as you're talking about that, what I was thinking about is the different women, or actually the different aspects of women that I find myself writing to or speaking to when I do post. And what I mean by that is again, there is the, sometimes there is the strategy, goal-oriented, goals-driven woman that I am definitely writing to, you know, the one that we imagine rising up the corporate ladder. On other days, there is the woman who's trying to balance it all,
the mom who's also the entrepreneur, who's also the community leader.
Right, you think. Sometimes I'm speaking to the strong woman, we can conquer the world, and some days I'm speaking to the secure, oh my gosh, are we going to make it, woman, because I think there's a little bit of that in all women. And
yep.
So And truth be told, of course, I'm speaking to myself a lot because I certainly have, you know, I'm a woman in business, as is everybody online. And, you know, so I am my target audience as well as, of course, the research that's been out there. But I know, just as with Carrie and her experience in caregiving, I know a lot of the different things that people are going through and their hopes, their dreams, and the different personas that we take on depending on, you know, what we're doing or what we're looking to do at any given moment.
Well, I would definitely go and make sure that you really have that picture in mind of who each one of these women are. Maybe you've got 7 or 8 different ideal prospects, but really write each one of your blog posts for just one of them, not for all 7 or 8 of them.
No, you're absolutely
because
right.
If you're writing for more than one of them, none of them are going to hear you.
Right. In any particular article or blog post or whatever, it is geared towards one persona or one whatever. And within, so I said a moment ago that we all have, you know, a little bit of these different aspects. But, of course, taking the example of women in business, so some of my audience is balancing family, et cetera. But a large part of my audience is not. A larger number of the women in business that I've met, and I believe some of my readers are actually, you know, women who are in business who don't have families. So, you know, there's no really.
I don't have a kid. I wish I did, but don't.
Exactly, exactly. And so speaking about kids all the time, for example, you know, people like you would turn it off, you know, would tune out what I was saying.
Well,
so
one of the most
day,
effective things that you can do is something I just suggested to Carrie. Take the same keyword, create a series of blog posts. If you've got 7 different types of women, you create 7 different blog posts. So what's going to change is both the story as well as the steps to the solution in some cases, because how a mom, actually, how a married mom versus a single mom would handle a specific problem is probably going to be different.
Right.
When you're talking about being in business. Create a series of blog posts so that you go back into each one and somewhere right around the story, maybe right before or right after, you ask a series of questions that actually points them to whatever the appropriate article is for them so that they can really see that you have all of these different articles that are the same problem for different audiences. And the same sort of thing. If you created personas or caricatures that people could follow based on who they are and what resonates with them, you could actually start using a graphical representation right on the blog. So maybe have something at the top of the sidebar just below your opt-in box and your RSS subscribe link that says, hey, on this blog we have 6 different women that you can follow. Which one is most like you? And have a little caricature or something that shows them what you're talking about, or have red footprints and pink footprints and green footprints and yellow footprints. Next to each post, have the appropriate set of footprints or the appropriate caricature so that they know who it's meant for.
Oh.
And literally create separate categories or separate tags so that they can sort based on each one of those people so that they can get the things that are most relevant to them.
Boy, that's really getting very specific about speaking to the different personas, having different caricatures. That's a really interesting idea. Really interesting.
Well, every blog post is able to be placed into more than one category. So I would really create a category for identities or something like that. And then within it, the individual caricatures or characters or personas, whatever you want to call them, that you're going to portray. And every blog post would go into whatever the topical category is, and then whatever category is appropriate based on the audience. So So if somebody wants to look at affiliate marketing, they can, but if somebody wants to look at only blog posts for married moms, they can do that too.
That's really interesting. I don't think I would have separated the posts according to the issues from a personal life point of view. That's a really interesting concept.
Well, imagine how much more powerful the blog is if it's read based on that sorting process.
Well, and it would be really easy to come up with a large volume of posts and communication if you looked at it that way. This kind of overwhelmed me when I first thought of it. I didn't see how to apply it. And now that I've looked into posting, now this does feel more doable and like it's more focused. I'm working to change my theme and getting my categories refined and seeing how you can serve people better by helping them find what they want when they get to your site. That's what I've been doing just recently. So it's really exciting. This takes it to a whole nother level.
Back when I first started teaching the apprenticeship program and first started teaching blogging, I required my students to write 4 posts in a day. And what I taught them to do was to take one problem, take 4 separate ideal prospects, and write about one problem. So the solutions were pretty similar. The resources were identical. But the stories would change for each one of those audiences. And they would write 4 posts per day all around the same problem, all around the same or similar solution, just slightly different based on that character, and the same resource. So it made it a lot easier to write 4 blog posts. Some of it was just going to be copied and tweaked, and only the story really had to change.
Wow, no kidding. That would not be all that much more work to come out with.
No, not a big deal. But let me tell you, you drive 4 times as much traffic. Literally 4 times as much. When you go to do your bookmarking, you just bookmark 4 at one time. And when you're commenting, you're going to go comment on blogs that work for one audience versus the other. So you can really drive 4 times as much traffic. Huge, right?
Wow.
And for you, Carrie, in doing that, I would make 2 of those people caregivers and 2 of those people patients. So how would a caregiver handle a problem and how would a patient handle a problem? Kind of different.
And I thought, too, about how you mentioned on one of our apprentice calls a side blog. Do you think that I would want to keep them mixed up and then just have a blog, a side blog that's just for caregivers, or to completely separate them, so that the caregivers...
I would simply separate them based on category. What I use side blogs for is things like a quote of the day or not necessarily a completely separate blog, because it's usually just one post is going to show from that side blog. It doesn't tend to be like a whole series of posts the way a normal blog would be.
Okay, so, and you're saying favorite quotes would be like...
Yeah, quotes work really well for side blogs.
Okay.
So like a quote of the day, a tip of the day. So what I think I had suggested to you was to have a caregiver tip of the day in a side blog.
Okay, that would be really easy to do. I should get that integrated into this new theme design.
And it will it's a plug-in, so go look for a side blog plug-in.
Okay.
In having a side blog, it then has its own RSS feed, too.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Okay.
And below it, I would have a link for them to subscribe to that particular plug-in. Oh, I see Cindy's here. I don't know if you can talk to us or not, Cindy, but you can always type your questions into the Blog Talk Radio web chat I'm looking at. still haven't gotten that thing to work, but, and I just don't know how to unmute you, Cindy, or I would try. I only see you in the chat. I don't see you in the regular dashboard. Jennifer, I wish I understood this thing.
Which thing? Oh, the Blog Talk Radio dashboard?
Yes. It's so frustrating to me because I want people to be able to talk. It's that kind of a show.
But I think that if you listen online, you can't talk. I think that's what it says.
Yeah, I think you can only type.
Call in. Yeah, you have to call in.
Right. So, Cindy, if you're hearing me, then just type me something so I know you're hearing me. How's that? At least I think you can type. Yeah, you can type me something for sure. That I'm sure you can do. Just frustrating because I've read every single thing there is to read on Blog Talk Radio about how all of these controls work. Boy, sure hasn't made any sense to me. I still can't seem to get some people unmuted, just like we still have a caller from 111111111111111, whatever number that is, and I still don't know who that is. And not unmuted.
You know, Gina, we've been talking, as that other person is getting unmuted or perhaps typing a message, I'd be interested to know your particular market. You have a lot of personas, if you will, in internet marketing. I mean, huge, huge. You've got everybody under the sun. So having an audience that includes everybody under the sun, that is in internet marketing, how do you speak to the different personas and characters within your audience as you write your posts or your emails?
Great question. So when I first started the IM University, actually the marketing university back then, when I first started doing this part of my business, I really saw my audience as being the 30 to 50-year-old men who really were sick and tired of their jobs, who really wanted to find a better way. And that was the persona I spoke to in anything I was doing. What I realized within about a year was that, A, that wasn't who I really was attracting, and B, that wasn't my bigger audience. My bigger audience is the 45 to 65-year-old women, not necessarily men, although men are in there too, who are really worried about what's going to happen at retirement when Social Security is not going to make ends meet. And so I tend to write one or two things for that woman that's 45 to 65 years old, nearing retirement or in retirement, a baby boomer basically, who's looking for a way to supplement an income. And then I also write for the 45 to 65-year-old man who's also looking to supplement, who's usually not looking to leave a job to come to this specifically, but is really interested in leaving a job to retire, but knows that that's not going to be enough to make ends meet. Does that make sense?
It does. Interesting. And as you were saying, who you initially thought your original audience was, I was thinking, gosh, well, I would think it would be somebody completely different. And that's interesting. So you
yeah,
have a lot of...
Yeah, especially because of my story with the fact that I had been disabled and, you know, I've got that whole self-improvement side to what I do because I teach goal setting and mindset and stuff. The people that I attract, if I don't just go out and start inviting people to be my friends in Facebook or Twitter or doing things to cause one audience versus another to come to me, if I just leave it up to chance, who I get are people outside of North America who are 45 to 65-year-old women for about 70% and men for about 30%. And so when I realized that, I said, well, shoot, why am I going out targeting the 30 to 40-year-old or 30 to 50-year-old men if what I'm getting is 45 to 65-year-old women? Wouldn't it be easier to just go after the people I'm getting? So now in going after that as an audience, in talking to that audience, they come in droves instead of a trickle.
That's so interesting. You know, now I look at the circle that, the mentorship program, and there's a lot of women. There's a few men in there, but I think there's a larger number of women in the 30 to 55 category. I mean, I think younger
people. No, there are so few women under 40 in that group. So few women under 40.
What about the vocal ones are then? I don't know.
The ones that are under 40 are almost all women who are there because of their moms. I have a lot of mother-daughter combinations.
Really?
I probably have 4 or 5 of them, yeah. They're starting businesses with their moms. And really, the biggest audience that is out there, has anybody seen the new Subaru commercial?
I don't think so.
There's this thing that's happening that's really never before been seen in history. And I think it all got kicked off with the concept of Kiva and microloans in third world countries. Microloans that really help entrepreneurs start businesses with a $10 or $20 loan in a third world country. What I see happening is that for the first time in history, families are wanting to come together to build a business, only in part to make money for the family. The real reason for them coming together as a family is a little bigger than just making money. It's A, to bring the family together. It's B, to make a difference in the world as a family, to make some small improvement, no matter how big or how small, to really make a difference in the world. Why I bring up the Subaru commercial is because there's also this whole giving aspect to the families coming together. The Subaru commercial says that from now until January 10th, every new Subaru that's purchased, Subaru will donate $250 to a charity of your choice. They are selling more Subarus right now than they have ever sold before. Their most effective advertising campaign. Well, why is it such an effective advertising campaign? It's because of this point that we're at in history where social entrepreneurship is a really big deal, where people are not just building businesses to make money for themselves. They're building businesses to make a difference for other people. And in making a difference, they know that they're going to make even more money at the end. That is my bigger audience. That is the more passionate audience for me, is going after these families that want to start businesses, whether it's a mom and a daughter, whether it's an entire family, whether it's a father and a son, doesn't matter. It's somehow family members coming together to do this, to partially bring the family together, to partially make money for them all, and to partially make a difference in the world.
Wow.
I'm helping three of my cousins, I should say. My aunt and uncle live here in Naples, Florida. They have 3 sons. The oldest is 39. He's a cardiologist in Cleveland, Ohio. The middle one is an executive chef, has been an executive chef in 5-star restaurants all over the country. The younger one is 31 or 32. He's also a chef, not necessarily an executive 5-star restaurant kind of a chef, but he's a really good chef. He typically is like a sous chef. Well, the 2 chefs have always wanted to start their own business. The cardiologist has been making so much gosh darn money, he really needs an investment vehicle and a place to put his money that is going to do some good for him. Well, this is a family that has been through hell over the years. I can remember some times when I was growing up that, holy cow, we were amazed that the family even pulled through. They have all come together and a week ago yesterday opened a restaurant here in Naples, Florida called Fred's Diner, Your Finer Diner. And it's a themed restaurant. It's a pet-friendly restaurant. Fred is the middle son, the executive chef. It's his chihuahua. And you can bring your pets to the restaurant. They have a whole patio set up. Well, it is so interesting to watch this family come together as a unit. Mom is there, my aunt, every night at 9 o'clock when they close to help clean and take the towels home and wash them. the brother who's the cardiologist is back in Cleveland, but he calls every day to see how things went. You know, they have done at least $1,000 a day in Naples, Florida, where the economy is so bad right now, with absolutely no paid advertising.
Well,
in a diner.
A little tiny diner.
A little tiny diner, yeah. That is what happens when families come together, not necessarily to just go and make money, but really to make a difference. The reason that it's this pet-friendly restaurant is they saw all these people in Naples, Florida, who are so passionate about their dogs. People here are really nutty about their dogs. I'm kind of shocked by it. There are dog beaches that are, like, literally for the dogs, but there are no restaurants that are intentionally pet-friendly. There are many restaurants that will tolerate you bringing your dog to their patio, but they weren't intended on you bringing your dog to their patio. So they're just making it a place for the people who are here who are passionate about their pets and welcoming them with open arms. They're planning on doing things for things like contributing money to the ASPCA, doing things to really help the pets. They really want to make a difference. And that's why they're being so successful this early on, is because they're really there to make a difference. So that's my bigger audience, is those families who, whether they want an offline presence, an online presence, doesn't matter. In Naples, Florida, it's a very seasonal business. You've got 5 months to the season. The other 7 months, most restaurants go out of business in their first year here in Naples because you starve. There's not enough people here to make any real money. So with this restaurant, I'm helping them set up a true profit funnel, put together a whole line of merchandising from salt and pepper shakers that are cute little dogs where the noses are a little magnet so the salt and pepper shaker stays together, to note cards, the T-shirts, the hats, the mugs, the all different things related to the pets. So this whole profit funnel full of stuff, with a high-end product being pet vacations, where you can bring your pet on a trip with you that's sponsored by Fred's Diner, during which they will make arrangements that the chefs will be doing amazing meals for both the pet and the adult or the family while they're on this trip together. So that the other 7 months of the year, when people traditionally would starve, all of that merchandise, including the trips, can be sold from a website online so that they don't have to worry about going out of business their first year when it's a slow season. They can have the internet side of their business really keep them through and sustain them the 7 months, and the other 5 months have the restaurant do it for them. And now it's the best of both worlds.
That is so interesting. Somebody who's catering to people who love to eat with people who love their pets, and my guess is there are not a whole lot of restaurants out there that allow you to just bring your pets.
There really aren't.
They're focusing on that. You know, I wonder, they've got that movie that just came out on Christmas Day, Marley and Me, and I hear it's about a lover, right? It's about the love of a dog and a family, and it was
yep.
The number one box office hit last weekend, at least, and it's focusing on, I think, I was reading the reviews on it, non-pet lovers could take it or leave it, but people who love dogs, who love their dogs, pretty much love the movie. So,
there are 109 veterinarians within a 5-mile radius of this restaurant. What does that tell you?
A lot of pet lovers go to that area, go to Naples, Florida.
Just a few.
They connect with veterinarians.
Yep. And so one of the biggest ways we're going to grow the traffic to the restaurant is passing out menus to the veterinarian offices. You know, not a real big expense involved there, just run off some menus. But boy, it really gets to the right audience. It's just a matter of asking who is your audience and then putting the plan together for how to reach them. We're going to the radio shows in the area that have the pet doctors on the air. You know, you call in with your pet questions. Well, there's 3 of those shows in this area. We're going to them and we're going to give them gift certificates that they can give out as, you know, contest prizes. we're even taking the menus and we're going to code them with a $1 off coupon on the back. Each stack of menus that we drop off will have a code for just that one location. Every 5 coupons that get redeemed, that person's going to get a free meal. So, you know, it's just a matter of targeting better. So all the pet stores in the 5-mile radius have already been hit. They already have their menus in place. They are all so excited about it, it's not even funny. They're taking their dog grooming clinics and, you know, giving everybody a coupon from there. Their dog training classes, everybody's getting menus in there. Now we've got to go hit the 109 veterinarians, the 3 radio channels that have these shows for pets. We've got to go hang out on the doggy beaches and pass out flyers and menus. I was at a restaurant the other night that the woman was really being given a hassle by the restaurant because she had her dog. They finally set a table up way on the other side of this patio that was just for her and her husband and her dog that was nowhere near the rest of the people. So I walked up to her and I gave her a brochure. It turns out she's a member of a club that has 14 couples who each have at least one dog that get together every week at least once to go out to dinner as a group. And they really had a hard time finding restaurants that will allow them to all bring their pets during that once-a-week dinner. Well, this restaurant can seat 258 people. There's more than enough room for 14 couples and their pets out on this patio. They were thrilled. And there are tons of those kinds of clubs in this area. It's just a matter of knowing your audience. So, and then building the relationships with them. So we've got about 3 minutes before the show is over. What kind of questions do you guys have about this topic?
Questions on our topics. Gosh, I think we're getting ready to ring in the new year. So, well, I think we can set as goals, since goals have to be a part of the new year, figuring out who our different personas or characters are. And specifically writing our goals of, you know, writing the goals to speak to at least each persona or each character or however you frame those different audiences.
And write them. That is the key there. Write them, whether it's on the computer, whether it's in a book, but in written format. Don't just think them like so many people do about goals. If you think them, you're never going to get them accomplished. You've got to write them. And I really believe that you should do what Carrie does and write them in a leather-bound journal so that they are really an important part of your life. And each time you achieve one, go and give yourself a gold star.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, it changes. I've been looking at my writing journal, you know, too, because my blog posts, as I looked at my categories and trying to fill the holes in my category lists, and you know, just looking at that, you know, made me realize I needed some sort of a writing journal so that I could, some sort of a calendar, a you know, writing calendar. And now adding characters to that, that really takes a new sort of a look. So that's interesting. That's a lot to play with. I'm excited about that.
Well, write some goals for yourself, as Jennifer just suggested, of what do you want to achieve for each of these characters. Even go so far as to write down some goals that you have for the people, your audience. What should their goals be in the new year?
Ooh.
And share them with them on the blog. What should their goals be? Each one of those characters are going to have a different set of goals that they should really have for themselves in the new year. Tell them. They don't necessarily know what those goals should be. It's up to you as that expert to tell them.
Right, and probably not just goals on the main topic of whatever our audience is, but the connected topics. So, you know, all of us, we talked about women today, so it's not just our business goals or just our healthcare goals, but it's also, you know, our family goals and our health goals and our physical, mental, spiritual goals, each and every one of those, as well as strategies as to how we want to reach, how we're planning on reaching those goals this year.
And if goal setting is something that's new to you, I have an entire goal setting course that comes as a part of my Miracle Motivational Package, which you'll find at www.abundantpositivity.com. I'll show you in that course exactly what to do to set your goals up. How do you break them into long-term, mid-range, and short-term goals? What can you do to help achieve those goals faster? How do you track your goals? I answer all of those questions and more in the Miracle Motivational Package, and it's a huge, huge, powerful course. So Happy New Year, everyone. Happy holidays. And we will see you all next week on Blog Talk Radio for Relationship Marketing 101. Thanks, everyone, for being here, and see you next Tuesday at noon Eastern.
Thanks, Gina.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jennifer.
Happy New Year.
Jennifer, call me back in 2 seconds.
Okay. Bye-bye.